Moncrief
with Energlaze
on News Talk.
Hello, it's Jarlath Regan standing in for Sean, and it's now time for the parenting section with Dr. Anne Keogh, clinical psychologist. Dr. Anne, great to have you on.
Hi, Jarlath.
Fantastic to have you here. We've got four really quite interesting questions for you. Let's get straight stuck into them. My daughter is struggling with being a bilingual child. My husband is Polish and I'm Irish. She's 3 years old and regularly mixes both English and Polish in the same sentence. I am worried this is going to stifle her language progress. Can you please advise? Should we be sticking to one language at home or should we continue to expose her to both? I'm in a situation where I want my daughter to be in touch with both sides of her culture and don't want her to feel left out when she goes to the family occasions in Poland. This was something that my wife and I discussed a number of times when she was pregnant, and we feel that it's really important to us.
I think, Gerald, this is a great question, and I think one for so many houses all over Ireland. And so what you have there is a three-year-old who's really learning and developing her language skills in general in life, who's wonderfully being exposed to both English and Polish. And so what will happen in that case is that she's going to mix up her languages and her words, and possibly each language will influence each other's development, if you like. So if I was, for those parents, I would be thinking that if she's not stressed by any of it and she's getting on okay in that context, that's brilliant. Let her at it. Let her switch between, let her use both, let her develop her skills in both. How you would know if that was becoming a problem would be if later on she was quite stressed by it. For example, if you had a child who had only one language at home and a totally different language in the rest of their life, they might feel behind others in developing that language. So in which case you might blend a bit. But overall, it's wonderful that she'd be able to talk to the family in Poland and, you know, both of her parents in their languages and develop her words, if you like.
What's extraordinary is that the child won't even know that they're speaking a different language at 3 years old. Surely they'll just think this is just communication.
Exactly. And they'll be able to switch between, and that's really good. So it doesn't have to be perfect English in a perfect English context or perfect Polish in a perfect Polish context. They should be able to switch between. Now, that might be tricky if the person she's talking to doesn't know any Polish, in which case she shouldn't be punished. She's just learning the other word for that thing. Mm-hmm. You know, how brilliant that she knows a different word for it, but we can help her learn the other word for it. So one object can be called both words. Mm. Isn't that wonderful? Well, so it's a great question.
On my own parenting podcast, Honey, You're Ruining Our Kid, that I do with my wife, who's a child behaviourist and early learning specialist, this next question comes up quite a bit. My daughter recently started Montessori and we were thrilled when she finally got a place because we've been trying to find somewhere for her for ages. She hadn't been in the Montessori a week before the teacher called me up to tell me that she had been behaving quite aggressively towards the other children, pushing and shouting at them if she grew frustrated over toys or some game they were involved in. I'm really shocked at this behaviour as she doesn't behave like that at home with my husband and I or with her siblings. Do you know what might be causing this and what can I do to stamp it out?
You're right, Jared. It's a really good question. And it happens a lot. It's a huge change to go from being at home to Montessori, where there's so many more kids competing for sometimes less available. You know, everybody wants the one toy. In this case, it's quite interesting that she has siblings. So this is a child who's hopefully learning to share some things, but it might be a child who is less inclined to do that. So it's a big change. Montessori is so different than home.
So you think this is an only child being forced to share for the first time?
Sometimes it could be, but this child has siblings. So with the siblings, the child is probably having to share at some point, which is great. But I suppose what I'd be thinking about would be practicing the behaviour that Montessori wants to see and working with her Montessori teachers about how to reinforce the good behaviour. So lots of rewards for when this child responds appropriately. And then sort of setting the rules for how you can't really be pushing and shouting at others, but more so rewarding the good. It's interesting that it's a shock to the parents, because it's probably a shock to the child too, then, to be responded to in that way, to say get in big trouble for something they hadn't previously gotten in big trouble for. I'd be wondering, could this child have an unmet need? Could it be very loud, or could it be that they're tired, or could it be something that's happening that's causing them to kind of explode that isn't even obvious to anybody in the situation?
It's interesting,
perhaps,
that it's not happening at home, though, isn't it? That, you know, usually it'll be the other way around, that very tired coming home from school, suddenly very frustrated with everybody.
It is, but there are such different environments. If you like, kids are so used to everything at home, things are predictable. Perhaps her toy is always where she left it. Whereas in Montessori, someone is literally possibly taking it out of your hands. You know, that kind of, it's much more rough and tumbly, having to share, having to be more social. So I'd work with the teachers to see what is exactly the cause. How are they responding? I mean, this is a child who's communicating. Maybe that's really difficult at the minute, but they're certainly saying they're not, and this isn't okay for them. So can we find a way to make this easier for them? And can they learn more skills to kind of get through what, before it blows up?
So get the specifics of the situations when the frustration is taking place. And as you say, as my wife always says, Tina's always saying this, that, you know, you are paying those teachers in that setting. You know, you can, you should, they should be your first port of call, is working with them. The next question is a really interesting one, again, which I've seen as well, which is introducing a partner, a new partner, to a child. I broke up with my daughter's dad 1 year ago, this messenger says. I started seeing someone 2 months ago, but I've yet to introduce him to my four-year-old. I'm nervous that the relationship won't be long-term, and for that reason, I'm afraid an introduction might cause confusion and eventual hurt for my little girl. I've no clue how to navigate this. How do you explain the concept of a boyfriend to a four-year-old? And when would be appropriate for her to meet him in person? Well, fair play to this person sending this email for having the conscientiousness to think about this to start with.
It's actually quite wonderful that this person is thinking about the everything from their child's perspective. You know, and obviously things probably haven't been easy. And, you know, it's wonderful that they're hopefully happy in their new relationship. But to be able to take, pull that aside and come at it from a four-year-old's perspective is wonderful for any parent, or from the child's perspective of what that's like, is wonderful. So I would say that that is a tough situation for all involved, for the parent, for the mum, for the new partner, for the child's dad, and for the child themselves. From reading, or from what you're reading out there, Jared, you can hear that this parent is not, the mum is not that sure that of the longevity of this relationship. So that's probably a place to start, because it would be worth being sure before you would possibly add that into the equation for the child.
How can you be sure?
You weren't sure, maybe wait. Well, wait until you were more sure. But you might not be ever 100%.
I know, Dr. Anne, but, you know, I would imagine that what that's throwing up is actual logistical difficulties, that you're suddenly a teenager again, where it's like, I can't let the boyfriend be seen. I mean, she's looking for an answer as to, do I explain the status of this person?
Indeed. And if the time is right, then that is great to explain. But if you're not sure, and you know the kid's going to get very confused, or if maybe that mightn't last the month or for the next while, that can be hard too, because the child is looking for the kind of more solid idea of, you know, who is this person in my life? What you could do is introduce them as a friend, and kind of, this person is around, they help me, they're kind, they know what all the good qualities about them, which is wonderful. And then they're in the child's life, but possibly not in that role that you're not sure they'll keep, if that makes sense.
I don't want to cut you off there, but is the issue here then as much with the mother's view of what the man in her child's life should be, that she might be a bit, caught on wanting to provide somebody permanent for her daughter when there's absolutely nothing wrong with her having a boyfriend?
Of course, and mum is welcome to do whatever she wants to do. Like, you know, and I hope that that's all going really well. It's just from the child's perspective, they they are, when someone is presented as a partner, if you like, or boyfriend, the child will, like, their previous experience of maybe a partner or boyfriend, it depends on that. They're kind of maybe looking for something more permanent. So if that's changing a lot and the person always is in that role, you know, it can be confusing for a four-year-old, certainly. And another child may perfectly understand, you know, an older child might just understand that people come and people go, but possibly a four-year-old, it's quite young to get that concept that they were here maybe now and they're gone.
Again, on Honey, You're Ruining Your Kid, a parenting podcast that I make, it comes up again and again, my wife saying, you'd be amazed how understanding children are. And that it's a lot of the time it's us that are the ones with the hang-ups. A couple of texts in on the bilingual child. Regarding the bilingual child, we found that each parent speaking exclusively in one language meant our son could distinguish between the two languages. He's now a teenager, fluent in both languages, as well as proficient in two more. Holy moly. How can you go out with your friends in both countries without any support from us? Similarly, for our older relatives. I'm not sure I'm reading that correctly, but I hope this helps, says Vincent. It certainly does. I mean, that's some outcome there, isn't it, Anne? Another text.
Exactly, fair play.
Yeah, another text on the bilingual child. I'm in a family that is bilingual. The advice is that one parent, again, speaks in one language and the other in the other language. Many experts recommend the one parent, one language method for bilingual homes. And the idea is that mom always speaks her own language to the children and the dad speaks his. This is a good basis for successful bilingual home. You are obviously well aware of that, Dr. Anne.
Yeah, I mean, some parents choose to do that. It's very much based on comfort. So like how we communicate, if you like, the Irish person might switch into Polish occasionally or not, or the Polish person might speak English occasionally not. So it doesn't have to be as totally exclusive, because the world won't be totally exclusive. Now, people might find a lot of benefit from that. And if it suits that house and those parents, wonderful. But it doesn't have to become the only focus, if you like, of all the communication. You know, it's wonderful when families can do both or be exclusive, whatever works for your house and your child and your life.
Yeah, I love it.
It depends.
The rules are not written in stone. We're all trying our best. Yeah. That's the bottom line.
I totally agree.
My final question here. Hi there. My 14-year-old son has a really tough time talking about anything sex related. I don't know if there's anybody listening with 14-year-old kids who will find a more relatable situation. I know this is normal, this messenger says, for most young boys, but I've noticed recently he isn't even comfortable talking about kissing or anything like that around his peers when they are over in the house. Our teacher also informed us that he gets visibly uncomfortable in school when they are doing SPHE. For those of us who are new to this, that's what they call sexual education in schools now. Anything sexual related, apparently he gets visibly uncomfortable. I don't want him to feel in any way like this, as we have always been very open in our house. I know if I approach it with him, this is a teenage boy's worst nightmare. But I just want to make sure that he is okay. What do you do there, Dr. Anne?
I think you're right, Jonathan. There's not a teenage parent in the country, I'd say, who wouldn't find this conversation challenging, which it often is. But I think in this case, you have a 14-year-old boy who is really communicating that he's not okay with this content, even in front of his peers. So it could be a lot of things. It could be, I mean, the talk, as it's sometimes delivered or has been in the past, it is actually quite difficult and can be graphic. It can be, you know, the kind of content can be difficult for teenagers. So maybe he's developed a kind of an aversion to the whole topic and really doesn't want to go there on any of it. It could be that the science of it is bothering him, the kind of the kind of factors that maybe makes it a bit more gross, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
From a teenager's perspective. It could be that it's very cringy and he doesn't like the, I mean, teenagers in the house possibly talking about kissing is probably not the easiest conversation either. You know, it's not a grown-up conversation. It's a teenage conversation about kissing. So that may be awkward or cringy for him. The main goal would be that he knows that when and if he ever has a question or needs information, that he can come and get that. And that you're really open to whatever that may be, anything. Mm.
Yeah.
So that may not be so direct as in like, I ask you a question directly and you answer.
I really feel for that parent
email,
though.
Message.
You say it's very hard. An email and a text message, you say.
You know, leave a note. It could be
okay.
Any.
So, like so if just you, communicate if it some way other than knee to knee, eye to eye, where he's excruciatingly embarrassed. I feel so much for this parent though.
Exactly.
Because you always go to, as a parent myself, you always assume the worst. You go to the worst. What's wrong? Why is this happening? Has something happened that I don't know about? Is there something he needs to... More often than not, I find, I'm sure you've seen some crazy stuff, it's usually the most boring answer is the answer.
Yeah.
I would imagine that this is nearly by osmosis your kid starts to feel awkward about sex talk. And certainly, even if you've never modeled that, the culture that we're in, the movies they've watched teach them to go, oh God, I can't talk about that in front of my mom.
Mm-hmm. It could be anything. I mean, like, it's hard content if it's very new to you, or if you don't like biology or any of the kind of descriptions, if that makes sense.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's definitely like at 14, the information is coming from different angles, from peers, from teachers, from, you know, content anywhere. So if he's really defending against it, that's okay. You know, when he wants it, at least the people and the sources are reliable and trustworthy, and he can ask anything he wants when he wants to ask it.
The Richie Sadlier book is one that I've just left around the house, just as some sort of content for answers, something that you rely on. Maybe it's not Richie's book. Would that be an idea, just to leave the literature somewhere?
And it's great to have written resources, because people can come at them when they're in the mood to look at, when you say it's late at night or whenever it might be, they have a question, they can check something that way.
Okay.
But I kind of appreciate that this 14-year-old isn't pretending. He's not pretending he's fine with it, as if
this
it's okay. He's actually showing, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
So it's a very difficult situation, because the world is trying to give him all this information.
Welcoming.
God.
And that's the worry, isn't it? The Google, Dr. Google. Dr. Anne Keogh, clinical psychologist, thank you for joining us for this parenting slide.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m.
with Anna Glaze
on News Talk.